What's up, you guys? Welcome to another episode of Rock Bottoms Up podcast. This is our second episode, and I am so excited to be introducing our guest tonight, the one, the only, beautiful Shauna. Shauna is not only my wife, but she also is AKA baby girl, as you'll hear me say that a lot, because she is baby girl. And she's also AKA the grit girl, and you'll find out why as we get into her story. Like we said here on Rock Bottoms Up, we do not just speak about to the addict, to the addiction. We also speak to those who are affected by the addict and the addiction. We are going to be able to hear Shauna's story, listen to how addiction and those around her affected and impacted her life. Let's maybe do a little bit of intro, baby girl. Let's tell them a little bit about our story, how Chad and Shauna came to be.
Oh, okay. That's probably all. Living in South Florida and giving up. I had completely given up on dating. However, I don't know if any of you have ever tried to date in your 40s. Oof, but
it's not dating.
The joke.
Yeah, it's not dating. You don't date in your 40s.
Anyway, I really was like off the dating scene. I was done. But my sister, who lived in Idaho, along with Chad, told me that I need to go check this guy out on Facebook. And so we technically met online, not Tinder.
No, it wasn't. She didn't swipe right.
But I did go check him out, and I thought he was hilarious. And so listened to this video that he had posted, and I laughed hysterically. And I thought, you know what? If nothing else, I'm sure nothing will come of it, because I'm in Florida, here in Idaho. But who couldn't use another friend? And so I messaged him first.
She did.
And
old woman.
We ended up talking, and I think it was by our third conversation. I told him he was going to be my best friend.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, okay, I guess we're in this one, huh? We're in this one.
Yeah. I'm like, you don't know this yet, but you're going to be my best friend. And he's like, okay. Yeah. But here we are.
Yeah. I mean, that's all it took. You're my best friend. I was like, well, all right. Might as well get married then.
Later.
Yeah. Here we are.
A lot of learning. Here we are.
So tonight, really, really excited to get into it, because we are going to be speaking from as a standpoint of somebody who's been affected by addiction. Let's get into it. Let's get right on into it. So, baby girl, there you were, just a little baby girl.
Terrible.
In the household.
I'm not gonna date myself. But yeah, I grew up here in Idaho Falls. You should actually grew up 40.
Yeah, about 40 minutes.
I think it's close. I think it's like more like 30, 20 now.
Yeah.
I don't know what happens at the time. But anyway, never met him before. But I grew up in a small community in Southeast Idaho, and at the time, it was a lot smaller than it is now. And my mom was a teacher in this community, and my dad was a truck driver. Unfortunately, though, my dad also was an alcoholic. And because of the community that we lived in, and I think my mom's role in the community, we kind of grew up and learned, you know, that if you don't talk about it, it doesn't exist. And so I learned at a really early age how to put on a pretty face. And
don't we all
put on a pretty picture and pretend like everything was phenomenal and going great, when behind closed doors I was actually really miserable and falling apart.
Relatable. So, very relatable.
Yeah, so that was kind of my start into the world. I think my dad had probably suffered with his addiction to alcohol way before I, and unfortunately it continued on.
Yeah, let's get into that. So your dad's a truck driver. You don't see him very often. And when you do see him, what was the atmosphere? What was the home like when dad was back home off the road?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll just say this. Like, I think And there's probably a lot of people that can relate and probably some people that can't. But in my situation, my dad was, and he was funny. He was fun to be around. He was charismatic, except for his addiction ruled his life. And so I don't really, as a younger child, I don't really remember him actually bringing his addiction into the home. And, you know, he may have, but that's not my memory. My memory was more of him struggling with trying to contain and control, you know, just his attitude and how he functioned in life.
Like a dry drug, what you say.
I mean, yeah, whatever the definition of that is, yeah, that's, I think that's how people would associate it. So, you know, he could be the greatest guy in the world, but he could also be, you know, the guy that you didn't know which way his mood was going to swing from one second to the next. And so,
really unstable.
Just, yeah, emotionally, yeah, just really unstable. And it was difficult to kind of know where you stood. And so, like I said, I really learned how to, you know, I guess, walk on eggshells around the house and just never really rock the boat too much. You know, my dad, he wasn't physically abusive, but in terms of like just his volatility and in his emotional state, like there were times he would get really frustrated. So you never really knew, like one time something would be great and the next time it wouldn't. And so it's like you just kind of weren't ever really sure where you stood.
Very inconsistent. Yeah. As an addict, I mean, that is the case, because, you know, with being a dry drunk, whether you've been sober forever, you know, there's a lot of mood swings that comes with that, because we just really haven't been able to process our feelings and emotions very well. So, I mean, it can go from one spectrum to the other in a second.
Yeah, and I mean, as I've gotten older, you know, really understanding addiction, educating myself on it, I mean, a lot of that, you know, like learning appropriate coping mechanisms, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was my dad's thing.
Yeah. No, it's taken me a lot of therapy. A lot of AA meetings to get where I'm at today. So, baby girl, so as time went on, you had two sisters.
I did.
And there was definitely an age gap there.
Yes, I was 7 and 9 years older than my sisters. They begged my mom for my baby sisters, and was so excited when they came along. And, you know, it's so funny because I didn't really realize how dysfunctional our family was until probably my late teens and early. Because up until that point, I didn't know what I didn't know. And I wouldn't say that I thought everything that went on in our life was normal.
Of course.
And that every other kid in the world was experiencing it. But because we were in a situation where we didn't talk about it, I didn't really know. And so, you know, in that situation, because my dad was gone so much, my mom relied a couple kind of help pitch in and carry some of the weight of having two little ones at home.
So as you got older, as your sisters came about, did it get worse? Did it get better? Like, what was the situation as your sisters kind of came along?
I don't think it ever really changed. I think there was just an expectation that I was the oldest and there was a role that I needed to play and my mom needed help. And, you know, she was from an older generation where kids pitched in and they pulled their weight. And so they did. And I didn't really know any different.
Yeah.
So I think when it really became apparent that there were boundaries being crossed is when I was in my early 20s and, you know, my sisters encountered issues. As unfortunately, there was a responsibility that my parents placed on me to try to, you know, take care of things that really weren't mine to take care of.
So like you said, you know, as you got older in your early 20s, so when you left the house, you know, and that wasn't, you know, you left the house, that wasn't your responsibility anymore. Kind of maybe like what happened then, like in your, like as far as your house environment and you being tied, you know, close tied to your sisters that way?
Well, I mean, I always felt a responsibility for my family, and I think if you do research on, you know, kids of, you know, addictive pens, I think a lot of times, you know, I think birth order plays a big role in that, but I do think that, like, there is this level of responsibility that we carry on our shoulders and, you know, feeling like we're obligated to be there to take care of things that maybe we shouldn't have to take care of. We're obligated to take things. And, you know, unfortunately, dysfunction breeds dysfunction, right? And so, although I didn't really struggle with addiction per se, I mean, I did have a little bit of a bout with alcohol during, you know, my teen years, but it wasn't something that had a stronghold on me. But what I did is followed in my mom's footsteps, and I married, you know, somebody that really was very dysfunctional.
So you stepped in line, you helped to raise your sisters, and as you got out of the home, like you said, in your early 20s, you had to grow up fast as a child. You had to grow up fast as a child, and then not only did you have to grow up fast as a child, but then all of a sudden life changed for you pretty quickly.
I got pregnant at the age of 19. Ended up getting married. And you know, by that point, it's so funny, like, the age seems so young, but my mentality at that point in life felt like I was already in the third court. That's when it felt like I had lived with the level of responsibility that I had on my shoulders. So
there you are.
I found myself in my early 20s, and unfortunately, you know, I had my son, and at 3 weeks old, my ex-husband ended up going to jail, which later on ended up going to prison. And he was in prison for almost 5 years. And I mean, that's a whole nother story.
You got another story.
That's a whole nother story, which we won't get into tonight. But so, you know, here I am, this young 20-year-old girl with this baby. And really, you know, dysfunction has kind of been my education.
Yeah.
And at this point, I realized, you know, I want something more for myself. And so, fortunately for me, I continued to shoulder that responsibility, but I ended up having to move back in with my parents. And it was really difficult, because that was when I really realized the extreme of the dysfunction that my family actually had. And at that point, I knew that for my, just for my survival, and then for my son to not, for us to not carry on that cycle, I needed.
Yeah. So maybe explain, like, what was the turning point where you were just like, I need to do something different? Because I mean, you helped your mom raise, I mean, obviously helped your mom raise, you know, your two sisters. You became a young mother. Then you lose your spouse to prison, and so here you are with all this responsibility. And what turning point were you just like, I'm not going to just fall in the rut of things. I'm going to make something for my family.
Well, I think because unfortunately, being a product of dysfunction and the kiss that addiction creates in a home, and then, you know, marrying and then the situation we ended up in, there's a lot of stigma tied to who I was as a person.
Sure.
And there was a lot of people, some even in authoritative positions, that were kind of not very supportive of me, and really leaned to the side of statistically what would happen if I continued to rape my oldest son. And I think at that point, I mean, yeah, what was the turning point? There's been many turning points. I can't really pinpoint one, but there's been.
When did the great girl come out?
The great girl came out all from day one. I would say the point when my husband went to prison,
Your responsibility now for a child.
Yeah.
Not just your sisters, where your mom and your dad was there sometimes. Like, this now is your responsibility.
Yeah, and now I was facing a situation where, you know, things could have gone drastically different than they did. You know, I could have ended up not doing great, and that just wasn't in my mind. I mean, we always have a choice, right? But in my mind, that wasn't enough. As I looked at that little boy, I'm like, I can't. I knew the insecurities that I felt growing up. I knew the inadequacies that I had. I was very aware, you know, the feeling of less than that I felt, and I never wanted to. And so I knew the only way that I could change that, that situation for him, I could change, you know, what his trajectory looked like, was for me to be better. And so that was my guiding.
So we may have some young mothers out there right now.
Yeah.
Say something, like, what would you say, like, encouraging to them? Like, Shauna sitting before us today, speaking to, you know, Shauna at 19, like, how would you preach, or how would you influence and encourage others who are, you know, relatable into the same situation that you were in? What words of encouragement would you give them right now?
I mean, yeah, to all the young mamas out there, whatever situation you're facing, it wasn't a mistake that you were gifted. They are here for a very good reason. And, you know, as moms, regardless of what we face, we are leaders in our home. And you've got little eyes. And I truly wanted my son to have, you know, all the opportunity that I could possibly give him. And now, and I'll be honest with you, it wasn't a lot. I mean, you don't have a lot in your early 20s.
Yeah.
And everything, the rug just got ripped out from under you. But what I did know is, regardless of what the situation looked like, the living situation, how much money I had, you know, things that I could give him, what I did know is that I could choose my attitude. I could choose how to show up every day, and I could choose how to show up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's really encouraging, because at some point, you know, like you said, you were gifted this child. It's really hard for a lot of us to step up to the plate and to assume that responsibility and to make those sacrifices.
Yeah.
In our lives, it's really tough for a lot of us out there. But at some point, you just have to realize that you just have to dig down deep and realize that this is on me, and I have to show up, because if I don't show up, who's going to show up for me? Right. And you just had your husband go to prison.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we all have a responsibility. I think that's probably the biggest lesson of my life, is accountability.
Yeah.
You know, it's so easy in situations like that. Certainly for me, it could have been super easy to be the victim. That doesn't get you anywhere.
No.
That mentality doesn't get you anywhere.
No.
And if we have people in our life, whether they're our children, our spouse, or our family members, whomever, we have a responsibility, you know? And I realize that not everybody comes from the same situation, you know? There are some people that truly don't have supportive families, and that's okay, but you still have people around you, most likely, that are
resources.
But you've got people that are watching you. You've got coworkers, you've got friends, and you always have an opportunity to rise above your circumstances. Even if it's not a lot, every little step is a big difference when you're in the fight of your life, trying to break through something, trying to break a cycle, trying to break a chain, trying to break through a wall.
Yeah.
That's holding you back, and maybe it's held back generations in your life.
Yeah.
But the point is, it doesn't have to, and it can start with.
Absolutely. Yeah, good point. So 5 years passed.
5 years.
And now you've got your support, your spouse. How did things go as soon as you got your husband back?
Well, I mean, that situation does something to people, obviously. So I think, unfortunately, it was an impossible situation. think that, you know, him being gone and in the environment he put him in, and then, right. you know, I grew substantially during this time. I worked on myself a lot, and I was able to, I put myself in college. I ended up getting a college degree. And, you know, I think we were just on two different paths. And, you know, unfortunately, I didn't realize it until much later on. But I think he just could never, you know, we both came from very similar circumstances in the regard that we both had a lot of inadequacy. Very different family lives, very different scenarios growing up, but we both carried a lot of insecurity, a lot of inadequacy, a lot of dysfunction, a lot of, you know, we only knew what we knew, and a lot of times what we knew wasn't necessarily the best way. The difference was that I knew that if I didn't make changes, then I was just going to continue with the same cycle. And what I did know is I didn't like the path I had. And so what do you do when you're on a path that you don't like? I mean, if you're driving down a road that you don't want to be on, what do? You turn down a different road. Well, that's what I did. And, you know, sometimes I think people get stuck on this road and they think that because the map says that's the way to go, that it's the only direction that they can go.
Sure.
You know, and I think that that happens a lot sometimes in families where
forced into the situation.
It's like you only know what you know, so therefore it's the only road you can be on. And I think for me, by the grace of God, and I think that was another key factor of my life. Is I didn't necessarily grow up with faith being a huge component in my life, but it was a huge component in what helped me get through all of those circumstances.
Amen.
And I'll tell you why. So it wasn't because I was showing up to the building every week, or because I was religiously even reading scripture, although I think all that stuff is great. It was because at the end of the day, when I had done everything I could do and I checked all the boxes and I did all the right things, I just had to do something bigger than me, because ultimately I couldn't control the outcome, but I could control who I showed up as every day.
Yeah, absolutely. So, husband gets back. So you learn to adapt to a new situation.
Yeah.
So what happened there?
We just couldn't make it work. I mean, he just decided to make choices that were not respectful of our marriage, and I tried to hang on way too long, and I think that was a result of neither one of us really understood how to set healthy boundaries. He was just not willing to go and get the support and assistance that he needed to be better, and he turned to the wrong thing. He turned to other women. He turned to other things. I, on the other hand, I turned to, you know, working on ways to improve myself. And unfortunately, because of that, it led us down two very different roads. And there just came a point where I realized that in order for me to really step into who I wanted to be, we couldn't continue down that path together. So we ultimately ended up having to go our separate ways.
Yeah. So obviously we're married, so you ended up getting a divorce.
I did get a divorce.
Okay. So you got a divorce, and during this time, a lot of chaos, a lot of tragedy is associated around this thing.
Yeah. So you know, my family at this point, you know, through my 20s, they're going through a lot of turmoil. You know, my sisters they're in their own situations where they're struggling and dealing with their own dysfunction. Meanwhile, we're all dealing with the remnants of dysfunction of life that we grew up in. And then on top of it, I have, you know, spouse who is also dealing with significant amounts function from where he grew up and then what happened as an adult. And, you know, after we severed everything, actually the same year that we severed everything, my father passed away. And it was at that point where I think that was my next turning point in life, is when I finally was willing to let go of something that I knew that wasn't good. And I was finally willing to see that I was worth more than what I was allowing myself. And so that next turning point, I went on another just crazy mission to push and push and push and better myself. And I did. And then about a year after we completely severed everything, my youngest sister ended up having. So at the time, you know, I was a single mom of two parents because my ex at that point had basically, he was traveling all over the country working, and then he had found himself in a new relationship, and I was taking care of her two kids, and then my sister passed away, and she had two young kids, and at that point in time, I was the person who was able to take them in and to deal with that situation.
Yeah. So at this point, you lost your dad. You and your husband severed ties completely.
Yeah.
Then your sister,
yep,
unfortunately passed away.
Yep.
Very sudden, unfortunately. And then, so you're dealing with all this grief, you know, all, you know, forces outside of your control.
Yeah.
And then you made a choice to take on your sister's children.
Yeah.
So during that point, you're a mother of your own with two children,
mm-hmm,
and you take on two more younger children.
Yeah.
How was the parenting during that time? As you're kind of transitioning from all this chaos, and now you bring on, you know, more responsibility. How was transitioning, parenting wise, you know, for your sister's kids, your nephew and niece?
I mean, it was it was fairly controlled chaos, I think. We just, you know, as a family, we did the best that we knew how to do. I mean, it was a really difficult situation, and I don't know. I don't know what the right way to handle it, but we did the best. And it was a struggle for me for sure, because now, you know, not only was I already on a mission to make this life better for myself and my two boys, but now I was very much on a mission to change the course of the path that our family was going down. Because, you know, I didn't want to, you know, see these kids happen through the same thing. And obviously, you know, it was pretty traumatic what happened. And so I think we buckled down and we kind of formed a team, and we did the best that we could with it. And I mean, I have to give kudos to, you know, my oldest son. You know, unfortunately, he kind of stepped into the same role that I did when I was younger.
Yeah.
I guess the only difference is that, you know, we didn't have fiction in the home.
Yeah.
Which, you know, by God's grace, I'm so thankful for that, because it definitely could have been that case, but it wasn't. And I'm really grateful. So I was really grateful for him and everything he did to step up to the plate and to help in that situation. That's what we did. We just formed a team and we pushed forward.
Yeah. And I think part of the story that you need to share too is it's not that you just took on, you know, your niece and your nephew, but you actually left the place of support.
I did. So I relocated. It was a violent entire decision, but I relocated to Florida shortly after my sister passed away. And really, the primary reason behind that was because I felt like we needed a fresh start. We needed to go somewhere where we could build our life away from everything that had kind of, from everything that had had, what would be the right term? Everything that had, you know, kind of determined what our life. So I relocated down to Florida so that I could give a fresh start, so that we could really just down our life from where we had.
Yeah. Because, I mean, obviously, like, you know, your kids getting raised in a small community, now taking on your niece and nephew after a tragedy like that. God sent you over to Florida.
Yeah.
And once you got to Florida, how was adjusting to, you know, a place, you know, from Idaho Falls, where you had your mom, your sister, to here you are out in Florida by yourself, you know, taking now all the responsibility for four children.
That was rough. I thoroughly underestimated the power of a network.
Yeah.
It was a huge learning curve for me, not just because night and day, more night and day different from where I grew up to where I'm to, but also it was a real exercise for me. Finally, it was the first time ever where I stepped out of a situation where I had all these people around me that I point fingers at as to why life was chaotic and things happened the way they did. And now it's just me and the kids. And but this way, there weren't any more fingers to point. It was just me
all of you.
In the mirror.
Yeah.
And at this point, you know, it really was the first point in my life where chaos wasn't getting to dictate or rule anything. That people's actions not getting to dictate and rule anything. And that was a huge blessing, honestly, for me, because it was when I realized that you really do get to dictate your circumstance. And even if you are dealing with things that are a result of somebody else's action, you get to wake up every day and choose who you're going to be and how you're going to deal with the circumstances you face.
Amen.
And I think understanding that, although it was a lot more responsibility in my mind, it was also extremely liberating, because for the first time ever, I realized I can build my life aside from anything that's ever dictated.
Yeah. So, like, reflecting back on your story, what message would you want to say to someone who might be feeling alone or overwhelmed by the effects of addiction in their life?
I think that what I would tell you is that, number one, you're not alone. I know that it can feel like it sometimes. It can feel very isolating, especially when you're not a person that has the addiction. Because it's hard to understand. It's hard to understand why they can't just wake up and not do what they're doing one day, and why you cope differently than they do. And it's a really hard thing to understand. But the thing is that you're different people. And for whatever reason, they're handling life on the terms that they know how to handle. That doesn't have to dictate your story. And
Or your choice.
And you're not alone. There are a lot of, you know, I understand that it can be hard to talk about. It can be embarrassing at times, especially if, you know, you're in a situation like with me. I stayed in a marriage way too long as a result of just really, honestly, probably being addicted to dysfunction and chaos. But there comes a point where you have to take ownership of that, and you have to take accountability. And I think that was the biggest awakening that I had, is that I wasn't responsible for anybody else's actions in my life. I wasn't responsible for the people in my life who had addiction issues, and I couldn't change their behavior. But I could learn how to set healthy boundaries, and I could learn how to make better choices for myself and my family. And I could find resources. because they're out there and there are people that want to help you. And there are organizations that are available to help show you better ways. And, you know, I'm a big advocate for therapy now. I didn't used to be. I used to be one of those people that thought therapy was for the weak. And, I wasn't the one that had the addiction problem, so I didn't need therapy. But guess what? I did. Because there were a lot of things that
you got exposed to and you adapted to, especially at a very young age.
Yeah. And a lot of insecurities and shame and guilt that I felt. And the best thing I've ever done for myself. And so I think just not being afraid to reach out, because there are so many more people dealing with it than you could ever imagine.
So true.
Yeah.
So true. And I think that's why it's so important to get, you know, continue to, you know, talk about this topic. Try to reach those people out there who do feel like they're alone. And in one way or another, through these success stories, help empower them in their life to maybe help propel them into making better choices, to give them the courage to stand up and set healthy boundaries, to give them and empower them the feeling and the faith and the hope that things will get better. And it starts at, you know, just one choice at a time.
Right.
That can propel you and change the trajectory of your life.
Yeah. And healing can happen. It can happen. It can happen in family. It can happen with your loved ones. It can happen within yourself. And when it does, it's incredible, but it can't just be. It can't just be the addict that gets the feeling.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's got to be everybody.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, there's usually a lot of reasons why somebody turns down that road. And it's not that it's anybody's fault. It's just that there is healing that has to take place. And you know, I know firsthand that reconciliation can happen because I've witnessed it in my life. Yeah. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah. Amen. Guys, it's been amazing time being able to speak on this subject, and I absolutely, you know, love listening to Shauna, you know, tell her story, because I think what she's gone through in her life is extremely relatable to a lot of people, men and women out there, can probably sit there and pick at this story and be like, I've been there. I know how that feels. Some of you guys are probably going through it right now. They're like, this person is talking to me. And I hope that this message gets out to you. I hope that it's encouraging. I hope it fills you with hope and inspires you to want to change your circumstances. And I know you feel like you can't because of A, B, and C, but guess what? We just heard today that you can't change them. That it is possible, and the outcome is not just rewarding, but it's needed for you to let you know how important and special you are, because for so long, you've been sitting in a place where you are just feeling a role, and that's it. But you know what? God has a bigger plan for you, and like we said today, it starts with one choice. You know, she said it herself. You know, she worked as though everything depended on her, and she prayed and gave it over to God as though everything depended on God. I just want to leave you guys with a heartfelt reminder that, you know, though these tough times don't define us, with a heartfelt reminder that tough times don't define us. It's how we are able to use true grit, as my girl would say, to get through them that truly matters. Baby girl today has shown us the strength that comes from facing challenges head on, dealing with addiction, family struggles, and taking on the unexpected. If you're going through something similar out there, you guys, just please remember you're not alone in this journey. Life can throw some pretty crazy curveballs at us, but within each of us lies the strength to overcome. Thanks for being here, baby girl, and sharing a very sensitive conversation with us. I know you've started your own program to help women to overcome their obstacles, and you do coach grit now, giving others hope to help others find their grit factor, connecting on a level that only someone like you with resilience to overcome and navigate life through insurmountable odds. Let's just go ahead and, if you would, maybe just let them know what you got going on this weekend, and let them know that, you know, if they wanted to reach out and if they're ready, you know, to take that next step, maybe you can tell them a little bit about, you know, now overcoming all of these, you know, obstacles and you know, life on life's terms. You know, now that you've made a program now, maybe just, you know, offer, you know, some resolution and let them know that you're a coach now.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there are resources out there and you're not alone. So I am one of the resources for women. I guess technically I'm a life coach, but I like to call myself a grit coach because grit really is my jam. To me, grit actually stands for God really is there. So, you know, I know grit is kind of a trendy word that gets thrown around a lot. And, it's related to that, just that grueling mental toughness that you have to have to push through things and accomplish big goals. But I think grit is the reminder that we're never in this alone. And I'm on a mission to help women see their value and their purpose, especially if they're facing difficult circumstances. And it doesn't have to be addiction. I mean, there are certainly a lot of other walls that stand in our way. And there's a lot of different addictions out there that stand in our way. Food addiction, you know.
Porn addiction. Sex addiction.
All sorts of addictions that can cause issues in our life. But there's also other hurdles. You know, if you have grown up in a dysfunctional situation, or maybe you grew up in a great family, but you've happened to find yourself in not so great marriage or you know, something like that. That's what I'm here to help with, because I never want to see a woman stuck behind walls because she can't break. And, you know, that breakthrough, sometimes it needs to be a mental breakthrough. Sometimes it needs to be a spiritual breakthrough or an emotional breakthrough. Sometimes it's just breaking through honest to goodness obstacles that are standing in your way because of somebody else's action. And through my adversities and the difficulties I faced, I had this divinely inspired idea to create this program to help women basically with their grit blueprint to understanding, you know, knowing that God is there with them. They're not in this alone. So there really is the formula for breaking through those walls so that you don't have to end up stuck behind them. And
you definitely figured it out.
It's really important to me because, ladies, you are leaders and you're here for a reason. And everyone that loves you needs you. Your kids need you. If you're struggling with things, your spouse needs you, parents, your siblings. And I want to help you break through those walls because you deserve more than that. And you were put here for a very specific reason. And you have gifts and talents that nobody else has. But you can't fulfill those if you're stuck in a situation that you can't break. And so, yeah, this Saturday, I am offering a free webinar. That's just a little taste of my program called Find Your Grit Factor. If you're not able to attend, though, you can look it up online, findyourgritfactor.com. You can also find me on Facebook. And I'd love to have a conversation with you if you're interested in learning more. And you just been needing that little oomph to help get you through and help you break free from what's been holding you back, then I've got you. And
she does. She got you.
I will take your hand and we'll walk through it and we'll show you how to do it so that you don't ever have to let those walls get.
FindYourGritFactor.com. Baby girl, Shauna here. She helps women show up when they want to give up. And you've heard her story today. That is so very true. Guys, that's the end of Rock Bottoms Up episode 2 today.
Yeah.
We are so grateful to have the love and support and the community that we are beginning to build here. And it's just going to continue to grow. So please, if you haven't subscribed, go to Rock Bottoms Up Podcast at podbean.com. Also, Rock Bottoms Up Podcast on YouTube, where we will be doing the full-length video and audio on Podbean. Obviously, we will be just doing audio. Again, we would love to have your support. And we, again, we just thank you for being here. Thanks for listening to these stories. We hope that in one way or another, it has impacted you in a positive way. Let you know that, you know, you're not alone. We do pray for you every night. We pray for that addict. We pray for the people that are being affected by that addict. But more importantly, we just pray that you can find the light within inside of you, and that you will take the steps and the choices necessary to grow into the special human being that you're supposed to be. So I think that's really what we're here to do. And so again, I was doing so good, and then I had to talk. Anyways, guys, whatever your case may be, we love you, and we hope you join us next week on Monday. We're going to try to get this out at 7 p.m. at some point at some time. This will air at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time.